My husband and I live on a ranch in a very rural part of Georgia. The nearest town with a grocery store is a 45-minute drive from our house. I usually go on grocery runs by myself while my husband takes care of things at home. One day, I was about halfway to town, on a fairly desolate stretch of road, when I saw two people on the side of the road. They were waving at me with their thumbs up. I slowed down as I got closer. It looked like a man and a woman. I knew it would be risky to pick them up, but after considering it, I wondered how long they had been out there, walking for hours with nothing around for miles. I felt bad for them, especially the woman. She looked pretty weary. I made the decision to help them out and stopped about 100 feet past them. I rolled down the window and asked where they were headed. They said they just needed to get to town. That was exactly where I was going, so I told them to hop in. The woman got in the back seat and the man got in the front. Before I could put the car back into drive, the man suddenly yanked the handbrake. He pulled out a knife and held it close to my throat.
Get out of the car!
No.
Are you sure it's worth your life, lady?
You ain't taking this car!
I saw a flash of hands go over my face, and then a moment later, the woman in the back had a cord wrapped around my neck and was strangling me against the headrest.
You're not so tough now, huh? Get her! Kill her!
Stop! Please!
What are you waiting for? Cut the bitch!
I thought I was about to be stabbed to death, but for some reason, the man was hesitating. It seemed like he didn't want to go through with it. Maybe his partner in crime was capable of more than him. Instead of killing me, he grabbed me and forced me into the back seat. After a moment of protest, the woman dragged me the rest of the way in. While I struggled to catch my breath, he handed her the knife and told her to kill me if I tried anything. Then, he got behind the wheel and sped off. The woman was furious. She kept screaming that they should have gutted me and kicked me out of the car from the start. Honestly, I was confused too. Maybe he didn't expect me to stand my ground at all. Or maybe he was just a coward. Regardless, we were soon going over 70 miles per hour, headed into town. I tried to stay calm and stay in the corner of the back seat. I didn't want to give the impression that I might do anything. Looking into the eyes of the woman that was guarding me with a knife, I saw a maniac just waiting for the slightest reason to take my life. The man driving the car, as unsure of himself as he seemed, was the only thing reining her in. That was a really scary thought. The two of them continued bickering at each other, trying to figure out what to do with me.
Well, if we're gonna keep her here, we might as well use her for something.
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
We can pull over and entertain ourselves with her. It's been a while, hasn't it? Don't you want to let off some steam?
No, shut up. We're not doing that.
Then let's sell her to some hillbilly in town for a few bucks.
Are you trying to get us caught? Come on, think straight for a second.
Think straight? How is letting her come along for the ride and not dumping her in a ditch in the first place thinking straight?
Shut up! Shut up!
Tensions were rising rapidly. At any moment, one of them was about to blow up. I knew it. That's when we hit the last junction before town. We were still about 8 miles away. But the simple four-way stop at an intersection of two rural highways was a stark indicator of the approaching outpost of civilization, where I had better be dead or gone before they arrived. To make matters worse for the two hotheads, there was traffic. A line of 4 or 5 cars in each direction waited to pass through. Once the man stopped, he glanced back to his partner. That brief moment of eye contact was enough to set the woman off. She lunged through the front seats in anger, and that's when I seized my moment. I frantically unlocked the car door and opened it. By then, my movement had been noticed. The woman screamed and tackled me. Both of us fell to the ground and struggled against each other. Almost immediately, the car sped off, illegally passing the line and charging through the intersection. Abandoned, the crazed woman on top of me became even more aggressive and unhinged. I couldn't overpower her. All I could do was defend myself. She slashed up my arms and blood spilled into my eyes, blinding me. I thought that was it right there. But then, at the last second, a bystander ripped her off of me. He was joined by several other people who had jumped out of their cars to help. They restrained her, and someone else came to my aid. The whole time we were waiting for the police to arrive, that nasty woman screamed and wailed, never for a single second giving up the fight. She bit and scratched several people, and while she was on the ground, she tried incessantly to get up. Fortunately, she was arrested by the sheriff, and I was taken to a hospital. Weeks later, my car turned up in North Carolina, which was as far as the man was able to get before he was caught by police. Let this be a cautionary tale about hitchhiking. A simple act of kindness can turn into a life or death situation in an instant. The story first appeared in the news in late November of 2023. A woman in Cherokee County, North Carolina, picked up Jordan Hedden and Stephanie Neese, who were hitchhiking. Hedden forced the woman into the back seat and took control of the car, kidnapping the woman. Stephanie Neese was subsequently arrested in Georgia, and Jordan Hedden was later apprehended after a period on the run. In my early 20s, I traveled back and forth across the country. I didn't have any destination in mind. I was just tired of being trapped in my hometown my whole life. So once I had a bit of money saved and gathered up some supplies, I hit the road and never looked back. The thing was, I didn't have a car. So if I didn't have enough money for a bus ticket, I was either walking or bumming rides from whoever I could. That often meant hitchhiking. I lost count of how many times I got a ride with just my thumb. There's a huge stigma about hitchhiking. But in almost all my experiences, it turned out fine. Of course, as many female travelers I've met along the way have pointed out, being a man makes it much safer. Plus, I always keep my wits about me and know exactly where my knife and hatchet are at all times. Unfortunately, my luck did run out one day. I was stuck in Fresno, trying to get to another city in California. It didn't matter which one. As long as it was easier to make money there. I flagged down a guy in an old SUV. He said he was headed north about 40 miles, which was fine with me. I immediately noticed the guy was really fat, probably over 300 pounds. He was gross looking too. But at that time, I hadn't showered in a while, so I wasn't in a position to judge. I hopped in and we got on our way. We couldn't even get through introductions without some serious red flags going up.
What's your name, son?
I'm Kai, straight out of Dogtown. What about you?
Well, my mama named me Jet, but that's just because she didn't know any better.
What do you mean?
I mean, my real name is Jesus.
You mean like Jesus Christ?
Yes, boy. Jesus Christ in the flesh. That's me.
Oh, man. I thought. Here we go. This guy was obviously nuts. But this wasn't the first time I'd gotten into a car with a crazy person. I just rolled my eyes and humored him with a bit of healthy skepticism.
That can't be true, man.
You don't think so? Then how come I picked you up and gave you a ride without anything in return? Who else would do that?
Lots of people have, man.
Sure, maybe you're right. Of course, if you were a girl, that wouldn't be the case.
Huh?
Never mind.
We sat in silence for a while. I thought about asking to be let out early, but I had a feeling that would upset him, which wouldn't be a smart move. I tried to sit there and bear it. Unfortunately, this guy was obviously a talker. I knew he was itching to say more stuff to me. Finally, he blurted out a question about traveling. He said he traveled all over the world, healing and saving people everywhere he went, spreading the word of God. I'd never left the country before, so I couldn't disprove anything he said about cities in other countries, but he was clearly full of it. Eventually, things took an even worse turn.
What's your favorite place you've been, Kai?
Probably New Orleans.
Ah, good choice. But I'd have to say the Virgin Islands. It really lives up to the name, you know? You ever been with a virgin before?
Yeah, once.
It's the best. The younger the better, I always say. I got some pictures in the glove box. You want to see? I strongly declined to see whatever illegal filth was in the glove box, but he kept pressing me. It turned into a shouting match. Eventually, he said he'd get the photos out himself. Then he reached over me and opened the glove box and started rifling through it. The car started drifting into the right-hand shoulder. I shouted at him to pay attention to the road. I tried to grab the steering wheel to correct the car, but he was too fat for me to reach around. That's when I saw the park work truck on the shoulder ahead of us. We were barreling straight for it. The lights were flashing and there were men outside of it, unaware of the danger heading their way. I screamed at the man as we drove off the shoulder and into the grass, about to crash into the trees. He finally noticed and tried to get back in his seat and get us back up on the road, but he overcorrected and lost control. The brakes locked up as we ran straight into the back of the work truck. Poor soul standing there didn't have time to react. The airbags went off and I was dazed for a few seconds. But when my head cleared up, I saw the horrific scene. The worker was pinned between the car and the truck, screaming in agony. I cussed at the creep and told him to get out and help, but he just sat there in shock. I got out of the car and tried to help the worker. But as soon as I saw what the impact had done to him, I knew there was nothing I could do. His legs were completely crushed, lost in a heap of metal carnage. A moment later, a woman came running over to the scene. She was on the phone with 911 and asking me questions, but I was still too shaken from the crash to remember exactly what she said. She was skinny, and though she was an adult, she had a juvenile look to her. I remember thinking she was probably the creep's type. And just then, he got out of the car and ran straight for her. The crash made any restraint he had disappear. He tackled her into a huge bear hug. She started screaming and dropped her phone, trying to hit him so he would let go. After a few seconds, he took her to the ground. I couldn't believe what he was trying to do in broad daylight. If he wanted to, I thought he would snap her neck like a twig. I rushed into the car and got my hatchet out of my bag. I went right over to them and plunged the hatchet into the back of his skull. Then I ripped it out and struck him again. I hit him several more times before his body went limp and he rolled over off the woman. She was crying and whimpering in shock. A lot of blood had spilled onto her face. I did what I could to comfort her, but she had retracted into a mental shell. I looked around at the surreal scene. Two dead men, a traumatized woman, and me at the center of it, wondering how the hell I got there. Soon after, police and paramedics arrived. I was questioned and cleared of any guilt. After that, the news reporters arrived. I told them what happened too. That video ended up going viral on the internet, changing my life forever. Caleb Lawrence McGillivray, also known as Kai, or the hatchet-wielding hitchhiker, was at the center of viral internet fame in early February 2013, following an incident after hitchhiking in the car of Jet Simmons McBride. During the ride, McBride disclosed many things about himself to Kai, including that he believed he was Jesus Christ. Shockingly, McBride even admitted to assaulting a 14-year-old girl in the Virgin Islands. While regaling Kai with his life story, McBride crashed his car into a parked work truck, pinning a worker. After a woman came onto the scene, McBride suddenly leapt from his car and attacked her. Fearing for the woman's life, Kai retrieved a hatchet from his bag and repeatedly struck McBride in the back of the head. Though he appears to be the hero of this story, in May of the same year, Kai was once again wrapped up in brutal violence. He was arrested for beating a 73-year-old man to death in his home. Kai claims that the man offered him a place to stay, but it was only to drug him and take advantage of him. Kai reports that all of his actions were taken in self-defense. But 10 years later, it was ruled that the killing was premeditated. The judge sentenced him to 57 years in prison, calling him disingenuous and cunning. It makes one wonder about the legitimacy of the story Kai told the police and the press in Fresno. Was he truly a hero? Or was he a man secretly waiting for a good reason to kill?
Are you sure? You might have to drive all night.
If I don't go, they'll give it to someone else. We need the money, Ruthie. I gave my wife a goodbye kiss and left for the night. I generally take trips early morning, but a former friend of mine got me this new job where I had to drive to the nearest dock and pick up medical supplies to be distributed at the hospitals. Even though I said nearest, it's almost a 60-kilometer journey. I checked my phone. It was 11:30 already. I hopped inside the truck, and immediately lightning flashed in the distance. The rumbling sound of thunder made me frown. Please don't rain. But like always, my prayers were unheard. Within the next 15 minutes, heavy rain started to pour. The raindrops were so massive, it made more noise than my gassy grandma. It was getting very difficult to see in the bad weather, let alone drive. Ruthie's worried face flashed right in front of my eyes, and I started to regret my decision. But then I thought I wouldn't be man enough if I just gave up and returned home. I eventually parked under a tree on the side of the road and waited for the rain to stop. The tasty dinner I had at home made me a little sleepy, so I shut my eyes for a quick nap. When I woke up, my eyes took time to adjust to the darkness outside. I turned on the headlights and got goosebumps right away. At the end of the road, I spotted a figure standing still. Who could it be? I turned the key in the ignition and began driving towards them. As I drew nearer, their features gradually came into focus. What the hell? I couldn't believe my eyes. It was a woman. I stopped right next to her and rolled down my side of the window. Are you all right, ma'am? She stood there, quietly, staring at my face. Her hair was disheveled, like she hadn't taken a bath for days. Ma'am, do you need help?
What time is it?
What?
Is it past midnight?
I was surprised by her line of questioning. I mean, if you're alone on a stranded road, wouldn't you be concerned more about safety rather than time? Half past midnight.
Perfect.
She looked up at the sky, and then started to walk slowly towards the passenger seat. For the first time, I noticed she had a backpack on her shoulder. She stopped right outside the door and smiled eerily.
Can you drive me to the nearest gas station?
Sure. I opened the door while smiling back awkwardly. She wasn't very tall, so she dangled her hand in the air. It was so weird. She could easily climb up, but she waited there for me. Out of chivalry, I grabbed her hand and pulled her up, and... Damn!
What?
Your hand. It's so cold.
Maybe because I'm a cold-blooded murderer.
She sat right next to me with her backpack on her lap. The way she talked, laughed, even breathed seemed weird and creepy to me. One moment, I even thought, what girl in her sane mind hitchhikes in the middle of the night? But then again, it was none of my business. We drove in silence for 10 minutes straight, and it was getting uncomfortable, so I began the small talk. So, are you from here?
Why?
Just asking. It's not safe to roam around too late, you know.
I ran away from home.
Just what I was expecting. Oh. Your parents must be worried, then.
They don't care about me.
Her face was so calm, yet expressionless. Why is that?
Dead people can't get worried.
Your parents are dead?
Yes.
She giggled while saying yes. I wonder, who laughs at their parents' death? Did I just make a mistake in giving this girl a lift? As if she read my mind, she stared at me, grinning.
Do you pick up hitchhikers like me often?
No. I generally do morning shifts.
So this is your first time out in the dark, huh?
Her questions were so irrelevant that I didn't know what to answer at times. Suddenly, I smelled something. It was pretty foul, similar to roadkill. With each second, the reeking odor was overpowering the inside of the truck, so at one point, I had to roll down a window to let fresh air in. It's impolite to ask a girl what's causing the awful smell, even though I was pretty sure it was her. Her clothes had mud stains, her nails were filthy. It was clear she had seen better days since she ran away from home. An awkward silence prevailed once again when she started to pluck the skin around her fingernails. When she started digging at them, pulling them ruthlessly from her scalp, causing blood to seep out. It was horrifying to witness. Damn! This is why elders warn us not to get high. Now it all makes sense. Her body odor, her unclean clothes, her weird replies. She's definitely on something. Something too strong. At that point, I just wanted to drop her off somewhere. Anywhere. Do you know how far it is to the next gas station?
Seems like you too want to get rid of me, like my parents.
No, not that. I'm going to...
Stop!
Her scream made me hit the brakes way too hard. The tires screeched and we stopped at a crossroad. She rolled down her window and stuck her head out to get a better look. She inhaled the air like she was trying to spot a certain scent, and turned her head right at me. Her eyes were wide, her pupils were dilated like she was plotting something evil. She tilted her neck to the side and smiled ear to ear. Is everything all right? She shook her head from left to right, gesturing no, and quickly opened her door and jumped down from my truck. Before I could make out what just happened, she ran into the deep woods and disappeared into the night.
Hey, wait! Where are you going?
But I couldn't see her anymore. I didn't know what to do next since my mind was getting all freaked out. Then I noticed she had left her backpack in my truck. The reeking odor was still there, even after she was gone. Is it coming from the bag? I opened the bag and... On November 21st, 1989, 46-year-old truck driver Robert Pierce picked up a female hitchhiker from the side of the road. The woman seemed a bit odd and carried a worn-out backpack. As she drove, Robert noticed a strange odor. Eventually, the woman got out, leaving her backpack in Robert's truck. When Robert arrived at his destination, he noticed the backpack on the passenger side floor. Curious, he opened it, and to his horror, found a severed human hand inside. He informed the police, but they never discovered who the hand belonged to, nor who the woman was.
Have you ever met someone and suspected they might be a monster? I have, and it's something that will stick with me for life. I was hitchhiking home one afternoon when I met him. I know hitchhiking is dangerous. I know I should have known better. Get off my case, Mom. I was 16, and I'd been going to visit a friend on the outskirts of town on my bike. I was about a mile from town when the chain snapped, and I was left to walk it home or leave it. That old Schwinn was basically my only means of transportation. My parents, being the dirty poor farmers that they are, couldn't just give me a car, so I would rather have left my leg on the side of the road than this bike. I figured I would walk it home and fix it. Chains were an easy bit of work, so that's how I came to be walking up the side of the road when a shiny black van came flying up the two-lane strip about 10 miles over the speed limit. I was worried that the driver was about to lay into me for being in the way. It was pretty common for the guys in the community to holler at you for being in the way when they were just scared that they had almost gotten you hurt. And as the van backed up, I prepared to be told I should watch where I'm going, not walk so close to the road, and expect to get hit if I keep walking in places where I'm not supposed to be. As the van backed past me, however, I came to understand that this wasn't a local. It had a soft, shiny black silk look with a mask on the side of it. It was one of those theater masks, the happy or sad kind you see sometimes, and it was something I remember seeing on the outside of the drama department store at school. This one was a little different, though. One mask was white, looking happy as it laughed until it cried, but the other one was red, its face kind of scary as it seemed to yowl. There was a word over the image, and I read it as Harlequin, but I know now that it said Harley Quinn. The driver rolled his window down, but far from being angry, he was scared.
Oh my god! Are you okay? I swear I wasn't trying to hit you. I've gotta pay more attention when I drive these small town roads. Do you need a ride into town? I'm heading there if you'd like a lift. It's the least I could do.
Now, I knew better than to take rides from strangers, but this was a small town. This guy was the first real stranger I'd ever met in my life. And I'd been hitchhiking since I was 12, so I knew what to expect. Don't get in with guys who seem like they want to get handsy. Don't take rides from anyone you get a weird feeling about. I didn't get a weird feeling from this guy. And the town was less than a mile from here, so I didn't figure I'd be in the van for long. It was better than walking. The sun was really hot that day, and when I nodded, he told me to put my bike in the back.
Careful with that tarp, though,
he said, and his voice had taken on an edge that made me rethink the entire ride.
I don't want you to mess anything up back there, especially not that tarp.
I opened the back door of the van and found something like a handyman's cache in the back. Tools hung from bags. There was a workbench with clamps and ropes and things, and near the bench was a blue tarp with something big under it. I was curious, but I remembered he said not to touch it, so I stood my bike up against the wall and closed up the back so I could climb in the front. The man was all smiles as I got in, and he chatted amicably as we rolled towards town. What grade was I in? How was school? Had I lived around here long? I answered him best as I could, but as his speed increased again, I got a little worried that we might have an accident or something. I didn't say as much, not wanting to make him mad, but when my bike fell over in the back, I glanced to make sure it hadn't landed on anything important. It hadn't, but my eyes were drawn back to that tarp, and I couldn't help but notice that something was leaking from underneath it. It was red, like paint, and it was trickling slowly across the floor of the van. It was just a little trickle, not a whole lot more than a small branch coming off the tarp, but it made me wonder what might be under there. Nonetheless, it didn't have to be blood, of course. It could just be a bunch of paint cans or something. Even if it was blood, it could be a deer or something. My dad hunted when deer and turkey were in season, and I'd seen him bring kills home in a tarp before. Still, something about that trail of liquid made me uneasy, and when the driver growled, "What are you looking at?" I turned around and said I was just checking on my bike. He didn't seem convinced, and as the town came into view, his whole demeanor changed. "You know," he said, his voice no longer cheerful, "I've picked up a lot of kids your age. I'm on an adventure of sorts. Maybe you'd like to come with me. I could show you where I dropped them off, or most of them. I'm taking one of them there now, actually. Maybe you'd like to see, huh? Would ya?" When he looked at me, his eyes were reptilian, and I knew what was under that tarp.
Mr. Monopoly here! Monopoly is back at McDonald's! Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to...
get your bag!
2 ways to peel for a chance to...
get your bag!
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to...
get your bag!
Play Monopoly at McDonald's!
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba!
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
This was exactly one of those people my mother told me to be aware of, and I thought that this was probably the last time I'd ever be in a position to hitchhike. I was thinking how this was probably the last time I'd be in a position to do much of anything, and I will always be thankful that I looked up when I did. We were passing by the library, my host not looking at the road, when I saw the crossing guard holding up his sign. I yelled for him to look out. He stomped on the brakes, and as the van came to a stop, I bolted. He yelled after me, but I did not stop running until I got to the police station a few streets over. I came running in, immediately telling them what happened, and that I thought that a guy had a body in the back of his van. But the police didn't even believe me. They told me to stop playing games and to go home. And after a few more tries, I was forced to do just that. I wouldn't even understand how close I had come to being a statistic until a few years later. Mom and I were sitting on the couch one night watching America's Most Wanted when they brought up a guy in a black van with a comedy/tragedy mask on it and the words Harley Quinn on the side. The driver, Marcus Flint, had apparently picked up 12 kids who were hitchhiking and killed them all before dumping them in the woods near Rutgers. They caught him after the 12th, the 13th getting away and reporting him. I realized, though, I never told Mom that he had picked me up around number 8, and I could have just easily been number 9. It's spooky to realize how close I was to death, without even knowing it.